Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Welcome to Just Make the Thing, the podcast about whatever it is.
You never listen to my show, do you?
I've actually started listening to it.
That was me and my husband, James, otherwise known as Mr. Sunday Movies. Welcome to Just Make the Thing. I'm Claire Tonti, and today I'm going to be interviewing that bloke about his YouTube channel, Mr. Sunday Movies, and his podcast, The Weekly Planet, that he does with his old pal, Nick Mason, who drives trams in Melbourne. That podcast is now one of Australia's largest independent shows, which I think is pretty bloody top for a bloke who started all of this in his spare bedroom. So, as this show is all about how to start a thing and keep on making it, I couldn't imagine a better person to interview than James himself. So here it is, my interview with Mr. Sunday Movies. So the reason I've got you on board,
yes,
Sunny Jim, is that Chanel is still away and my podcasting interviewer fell through this week.
Correct.
And so I thought I would bring you in here to talk about something.
You had two fall through, sorry. You had a very exciting one. And then you had Mason who couldn't do it. And then when you couldn't get Mason, you got me.
That is insulting. Well, you've already been on this one.
Yeah, I know.
So really, you're my last resort, as always. Lucky you live in the house with me, so you couldn't say no.
That is lucky.
You also tried some of my hot cross buns that I made this week, also making things. What did you think of them?
Look, not good.
They weren't that bad.
The one that I had was like a rock with a sultana in it.
Yeah, fair call. They were okay when they came out
little
of the oven.
Like that weird little gnarly one.
That was real bad. Yeah. That was a real small weird one.
What's a typical day for you in terms of how you structure your work?
Well, I sleep in because I work late generally. The way that we operate, and you know this obviously.
Yeah.
I normally start late and do a feed or whatever for the kid, and then you'll do an early morning thing.
Yeah. So just talk us through, when do you get up? What's your actual day like?
Well, it depends on the day. Like it is, some days are busier than others. Like basically I kind of get up, I'll have a look at kind of movie news and trailers or anything that's happened.
Eat your muesli.
Eat my muesli every day. It's important. I don't know how many hours I work. I don't know, 6 hours a day and tomorrow I'll do whatever. Like it's just kind of whenever I'm free, I just kind of work out.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's in with your tunnel vision, because I get to about 9 o'clock and my brain's done. Just packs itself in and says, see you later, yeah. Claire.
Well, you're definitely more morning than I am. You can't really work at night.
I can't at all. And I have to sleep. I have to get a good 8-9 hours, whereas you can exist on very little sleep.
I'm not very good in the morning in general. I don't know why.
Worst
maybe if I drank. I'm not like mean and horrible and
whatever. No, but I just mean you hate it.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah. I can't do anything.
Do you know what the first thing you say in the morning is? Yeah, every morning when I hear you wake up, I'm alive.
Not again.
This thing, which is so funny because you're doing what you love.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. I'm an idiot.
You're not an idiot, but yeah.
But there is also, and I've talked about this a little bit, there's a little bit of guilt with me associated with leaving teaching for this. Because I feel like for teaching and what a lot of the stuff we specifically did before this was helping people and kids specifically. And that's why we kind of do a big kind of charity push each year, is because you do more of it than I do. I don't do a lot of that stuff anymore. But the way I justify it to myself is because we've got a kid, now I get to be at home with him. Yeah, so I still kind of do struggle with, what am I chatting about Spider-Man for? Like that kind of does weigh on me a little bit.
It's interesting though, because I always say to you, read the emails, because there are so many wonderful emails that you and Meso get from listeners who just, and I'm sure people who are listening to this would agree, who love the show and look forward to their Mondays to hear you guys chat. And we often get emails from people who've been through really tough times saying that listening to you guys has really helped them through.
Yeah.
And I know it's small because it is it's a podcast, but then also you really can't underestimate the value of a good old-fashioned laugh and a share of something you have in common with other people. And also just often this is repeated, and it would be interesting to see how many emails say this, people feel less alone, like they feel connected. And I think not just with you guys but with the whole community of Wackadadoos. Like, it's, am I saying it right?
Wackadadoos.
Oh, Wackadadoos. I always say it wrong. There's someone always
It's not even a real
me.
Thing. I said it as a passing comment.
And which happens Mason, to you a
And
lot.
Mason kind of clung to it that it became a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Mason loves doing that.
He did it because
it would hate
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you yeah, it would annoy me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what's so wonderful.
That could segue really well into what we're talking about today, which is our son.
Yes.
Well, kind of not actually him exactly, because we don't really talk much.
I thought you were going to say he's kind of not actually our son.
No.
No, he is.
We affectionately call him that weird little one.
Yeah.
Like you described the whole girl's fun. No, I in my desperation for a topic for this week, because I'm doing the podcast weekly, I thought it would be fun to talk about the thing that we jointly made together, which is our son.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of us did more work than the other, but yeah.
One of us did a significant amount more of work, and should the other one therefore should lie and say that they loved the whole cross buns that took me 2 days to make.
I'm sorry, they were really good. I can't wait to eat the rest of them.
I think the issue was I didn't read the recipe a fourth time and I missed a couple of steps.
Hey man, it happens.
Yeah, so I'm going to redo them. You unfortunately can't do that with kids though.
Not legally. Like, I mean, you can have another one to try to improve on the previous one, I guess.
That's true. Is that what your parents did with you?
Yeah, exactly. They went for the first one and went, no good. And then for me, they went, too short. And then for the third one, they went, fine.
He's quite tall, actually.
He's very tall, yeah.
Yeah. It's weird that Mason doesn't like him. But then is it because he's a lot taller than Mason? So maybe that's why Mason doesn't like him.
But I think it's because – I think it's the age – well, Mason said this. It's the age gap. Because they're 6 years apart, maybe.
Oh, that might may as well be
5 years. Well, it is when you're 17 and somebody's 12. You know,
yeah, that's true. They're annoying at that age.
Yeah,
that is very true. Mm. Okay, well then I thought I'd start by saying, is being a parent what you expected?
Oh, that's such a boring question.
Well, excuse me, this is my podcast. You have to answer it because I asked you to do it.
Sorry.
10 minutes ago.
Yes.
You know what else I've learned through all of this? Everyone has stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And once they have kids, everyone has a hell of a lot of stuff going on. And people are dealing with a whole lot of things while going through everything.
Yeah.
Has it made you more compassionate?
I think so, yeah.
Being a dad of a son, what kind of man do you want him to be?
Exactly like me. In every
well, you're in luck because he literally is you in a small person.
He looks a lot like me as a kid, like dead on.
And behavior-wise, he's really similar.
It's quite weird.
That's what I found really interesting, that they do. He gravitates. Like, we've got a lot of different books and a lot of different toys around and different shows he could watch and different types of music.
Yeah.
But very early on, he had particular things he loved. Like, he loves animals.
Yes.
And yeah, he gravitates to those Star Wars golden books. He's like paws over, like obsessed with.
Bizarre. Yeah.
So I do think that part of it, maybe he is just a small version of you. But, you know, I think you can also, if he likes the same things as you, that's okay too.
Yeah, I know that, yeah. Like, but because I'm not a big sport guy.
What?
No.
No, surely not. You don't even realize this, but if I had put the sport on, any kind of the sport, you almost have a physically angry reaction. Like, you have to walk past and go, what are these bloody things? Look at them bloody running around with their balls. That makes no sense. And it gets to the point where I'm like, oh, just turn it off.
No, what annoys me about sport is people treat it like it matters.
It's a rant coming on.
Like, they're like, this is like your thing is dumb, say like movies. None of this is real.
It's nerd stuff.
Indiana Jones can't run from a boulder and whip and swing and whatever. It's a man chasing a ball in shorts. Like, what are you talking about? It's all dumb. Like, it's all the dumbest thing ever. Like, me and Mason talk about this occasionally, but everybody's a nerd about something. It might not be a thing that's considered nerdy.
Yeah.
But like if you love sport, heads up, you're a sports nerd. And that's fine. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely.
Mm.
Was that a bit like me? I'm a hot cross bun nerd now.
I guess you are.
Pottery.
I mean, I wish you were better at it, but sure. Another thing that I find is important, it's who you kind of surround yourself with for what you're building in particular. And that's also a lot of the reason why I didn't tell anybody, because I didn't want people to be like, what the hell are you doing? Why? Because I still get a bit of that now. And I don't. I think I feel like I'm going to get it. That's probably more the case of it now, because it's like a real thing. But there was a concern of mine that people were just going to get in my head about, this is a waste of time and you're an idiot. So yeah.
I think some of your friends are still a little confused.
Yeah, they have no idea what I do or listen. They none of them care, but which is good. I like that. I don't care about them either. I'm glad. No, that's not true.
Well, I do think as well that there have been other people in your life who've supported you.
Yeah, totally. My parents were never like, you need to do this and get it and do this kind of job or whatever. They've always been like, work hard and whatever, but they were never, what are you doing? Like, stop. They were always been encouraging. When I was like, I'll do business, they went, all right. And when I went, I'm quitting, they went, all right. So the only time they kind of pushed me was when I was kind of doing nothing or being an idiot. Yeah, that's when they kind of...
That's when you had that long fringe.
Yeah, when I had my long fringe.
When you were a teenager.
It was a pretty good fringe. Yeah. We should post a photo. No, that's not.
You were hanging out at train stations being a rat bag.
Yeah, that's me. Good old rat bag Jimmy, they used to call me.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
Well, thank you so much for saying that about.
Well, it's true. What I do is literally impossible without you, because what you do behind the scenes and also to allow me to do it and give me the space to do it has meant that this has grown to what it is. And I just don't think people realize that. And I think it's important that kind of people do.
That is so lovely. But you know that the opposite is also true, that I like being a support crew and I am so amazed and constantly surprised by how much you've achieved and how you keep surprising me in how fast you work but how hard you work and how funny and creative and odd you are. And now this is just going to devolve you.
What is this?
And I really love you.
I thought it was going to take a turn into insults. I was like, and you're odd and you've got grey hair and you're kind of weird looking and all your friends are dopes.
It is strange that you're a goat, but
that is strange, yeah.
Love does funny things.
You can't help who you are.
No, yeah. No, you can't.
On today's episode, I get to interview one of Australia's best loved comedians, Will Anderson. And for the record, my husband man, James, listened to this bloke's radio show every day on his way to high school. From breakfast radio to endless stand-up gigs to hosting the ABC TV show, The Gruen Transfer, Will's 20-plus year career has been nothing short of excellent. His podcast studio is literally packed floor to ceiling with towers of books, board games and memorabilia. And I have to say, meeting Will was pretty great, but his two dogs were by far my favourites. Those two have some serious personality, and you'll hear Ramona having her say in the episode. She puts our podcast dog to shame. I was so fascinated by our conversation that we nearly missed our flight home to Melbourne from Sydney, so I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here is episode 5 of Just Make the Thing with Will Bloody Anderson. I am here at Will Anderson's house, which is kind of amazing. So how are you today?
Oh, well, thank you for coming to my house. I appreciate
You're
that.
Welcome.
Thank you for enjoying it. I like it. It's the only house that I've ever owned. I don't really own, you know, all of it yet. Like the bank technically owns about half of it still, but the bit we're in and probably to the house, we can definitely at least claim that much. I think I own a backyard and like an office area.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to own a bit of it, this is a pretty cool bit. We're in a studio. It's really awesome. With a cool pool.
Well, I work from home. So obviously for me, it's nice to have a separate space, you know, like, so previously, you know, when you work from home, I might have like a room in the house or whatever, but it's really nice for me to be able to get up, particularly in the morning, because I'm an early riser. So I'll often just like, you know, when I get up, I'll head out here. Maybe one of the dogs will come out like behind you and come and sit out and keep me company.
They are the best dogs. They've just been sitting, chilling out all day.
They certainly, well, they spend a lot of time in here while I'm podcasting. So I think they understand what's going on at this point, but it's nice to have a separate separate space where you can sort of just go to somewhere and go, okay, oh, well, this is nice. I'm at work now.
This is my space. This is where I am. So I guess we were talking about ideas. I'm really interested in whether you think the ideas are all inside your head or ideas are kind of external things that you kind of have to tune into.
When I used to run, when I used to jog, often in the middle of the jog, you'd suddenly go, ah, that's it. That's what that's meant to be. Now I get it. Now I get it. Swimming, that was another one, which is the worst because you have no notepad, you have nothing. So then you either go, I have to cut short my swim. I always used to hate if I had a good idea early in a swim because I either had to cut this, like the swim, I just get out of the water and write down this idea. Or then for the next like hour of the swim, all you're doing in your head is go, remember that idea. I cannot think about anything else anymore. Just remember that idea that you're going to write down.
That's so, why do you think that is? Do you think that's because your subconscious brain's just hanging out in there and that's when the real work happens?
I don't know. What's a good analogy? Driving, right? Mm. When you first get your license, you have been judged by a system we come up with as a society of being confident enough to be on the road by yourself in charge of a vehicle.
Yeah.
But the truth is you're still at a point probably for most people that you have to think about driving.
Yes.
So you have to think about the idea that, like, you know, check the rear vision mirror or make sure that it goes from this gear or I've got to, like, you know, think about these things. Whereas the point where you've been driving for years that you can just drive. So if an accident or a situation arose, hopefully instinctively you'd be able to handle that situation. Mm. I think often when we're writing or we're trying to construct something, we're still in that sort of, you know, you've just learnt to drive, you're still checking the rearview mirror, you're going, does this have structure, does this have content, does this have form? Whereas sometimes it's about going, okay, I have all the information I need now. Okay, here's a better analogy. That's a terrible one. I'm going to go with
like
a better
one. No, it kind of makes sense to me.
The difference between following a recipe and being able to cook.
Yes.
Right? You know, yeah, so some people, if they get their mystery box on MasterChef and a chef and they have like a list of like the recipe things, they can replicate that. They can follow that instruction book and you can cook and you can make something really nice that you made yourself. But you're kind of following a recipe.
Yeah,
whereas you get to a point sometimes where you can go, okay, well, with these ingredients, I'm just going to like taste it a bit. I'm going to like, you know, traditionally I put sugar in here, but you know what? I've tasted it and I think the raspberries are sweet enough that I don't need sugar and maybe I'll go in a different direction.
Yeah.
I think that's when it gets just a little bit more interesting. We make a choice going, this is interesting for the... So I think, to be honest, she was quiet through all the other podcasts.
She's so great.
I really think it's you she's missing because you were paying her a lot of attention during that time.
I know,
and now
she was
you're
just
not.
Like, oh, now she's not talking to me.
Yeah, see, James wasn't doing his bit. You've got to do a little dog care of your own.
You got to, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, back rub would be good. She'll enjoy a back rub. Yeah. She'll be into that, definitely. And that's kind of her main thing that she likes.
She's so happy.
There you go. See, look at that. That's all right.
So, do you ever surprise yourself with things that come out of your brain?
Of course. Like on stage and stuff. Like I had a famous incident in my work where I was kicked off a plane. Well, not kicked off a plane. That's not true. I was arrested at the end of a flight through a series of misadventures that turned out weren't my fault.
Mm.
Ended up being arrested, went to a police station and had to do a show in Wagga that night. So I was out, cleared, and had to end up like going and doing the show. And the first 15 minutes of that show, so I've had an audience waiting for half an hour, like I'm half an hour late, and they all know in the audience because it's happened in the last couple of hours. Everyone knows I'm late.
Because everyone's got their phones. Yeah. They know.
And it goes around. So literally now I've got 500 people in an audience who know nothing about what's happened but all know that something has happened, right? And I walked down on stage that night and the first 15 minutes of that show were about
what had happened,
right?
First
15 minutes, completely off the top of my head, completely. And it was fun. Like, I mean, there was honestly bits in the rest of the show where they weren't laughing as much as the first stuff. And I was like, I better refer back to that first stuff.
Do you have a favourite moment on stage or a favourite set that you did or a moment that you remember that you went, yeah, nailed that, proud of that?
Well, I got to be honest with you, this Wagga 15 minutes was probably, to me, I was like, this is, okay, this is it. This is kind of as cool and fun and whatever as this ever gets. Like, regardless of whatever's happened up until this point, in a purely comedic experience, you've got everyone in the room who definitely wants to hear about it. You are in the moment, so all my reactions are completely natural. Genuine. At that point. You know, they're not me recreating what I thought the moment was. It is actually the moment. but enough things have happened if I just keep talking that they're interested in it. To me, that's a brilliant moment. But how the fuck do I recreate that? Yeah. Like, I don't want to have to get, like, arrested on every flight just so I can have, like, a good first 15 minutes of local material.
No. You know. What advice would you give to people out there who want to start a thing or are struggling to keep on making a thing?
Well, firstly, just, I mean, I reckon the greatest thing of all is just to start with that idea of just loving the thing you're doing. Like, I mean, if you don't love it, how can you expect anybody else will ever love it?
Mm.
Like, and, you know, art is not meant to be a survey. You know, you're not meant to, like, you know, survey 1,000 people and find out what they like and then come up with a computer program. I think that's a really good place to start with any sort of art. Stuart Lee, who's a brilliant UK comedian, always talked about the idea of, like, the 2,000 rule. And he said, if you can get 2,000 people to love something enough that they will pay $50 a year for it. So whether it's a ticket to the show, whether it's a T-shirt, whether it's like whatever your business is, but I'm just using the analogy of my business, obviously, you know, whether it's being a Patreon subscriber to your podcast, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But if you can get 2,000 people to spend $50 a year, to like you enough to spend $50 a year on your career, that's $100,000. And that means that you can, you know, fund something, you can have a little project. So often we think about 200,000 people when we should be thinking about how can I make something that 2,000 people love $50 worth? You know, I mean, you know, start by making the thing you do.
Yeah.
The people who like it, make them really love it.
Yeah.
Don't fuck them off to have a broader audience. Make them love it, because the people who really love it, they will buy the T-shirt. They'll buy the poster. They'll, you know, we have people who listen to this podcast, who listen to my podcast, Tofop, who have been listening, you know, since the start, and they've bought everything. Like, I mean, they must have some crazy room at their house.
Just a Tofop palace.
Yeah. I mean, they literally probably only wear Tofop T-shirts to work. Like, I mean, because they love it enough. And I think that's the thing. It doesn't matter what it is. Start out making something great and find a small amount of people who really love it. And if they really love it, they're going to tell people about it anyway.
And you learn to build all your roads on today, because tomorrow's ground is too uncertain for plans and futures have a way of falling down in mid-flight. And you really do learn with every goodbye, you learn. Veronica A. Schoffstall. This poem popped into my head after I rang up Charlie Clausen this week to pick his brains about making things. Charlie is an actor who you might recognise from Aussie hit shows like Blue Heelers and Home and Away, and more recently the TV series of Wolf Creek. He is, though, also a writer in the middle of writing and producing his own film with his wife Gemma, and is one half of the Planet Broadcasting podcast Tofop. Will Anderson and Charlie have been making their pod for years, usually chock full of ridiculous scenarios and bloody hilarious anecdotes thrown in for good measure. It's well worth listening to, and Charlie himself is always funny and self-deprecating and charismatic. This interview, however, is a different Charlie from the one that likes to talk about Batman.
Hello, Claire Tonti. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? We finally got onto each other.
I know. Can you believe it? It's the
I know.
The Chinese democracy of podcasts.
I know. It's been ridiculous. Oh, my God. Do you struggle with self-doubt with the things that you make?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. Like, I have a hard drive filled with, you know, unproduced scripts and ideas, you know. You know, another great bit of advice I got was from someone who said there are no great ideas. There's only ideas and then how much work you're willing to put into them.
Mm, that's massive.
Yeah. And it's, look, and that's all well and good to say. It doesn't fix how horrible that feeling of I have to come up with a solution and I don't know what it is. And I've come up with stuff and it doesn't feel right. And like, you don't know if you'll ever get it right. You know, that's why I think it's important to maybe have a few things going at once, you know, like not just in one discipline, but like maybe there's a few things you can do. It's also important to take breaks, you know, not to stare at the same thing forever.
Yeah, go to Europe for a while and blow some steam, wear a kilt.
Well, exactly. Fill the tanks. I mean, I know we're joking, but that honestly, so I went to Amsterdam for 8 days and literally just spent the 8 days walking around, looking at things, going to art galleries, seeing bands, taking in architecture, antique shops. And it was the perfect antidote. Like it's exactly what I needed, because it just, I got away. I got out of that kind of cycle of you suck, you're a loser, you know, you wasted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What are you even doing? It all looks stupid. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes the creative process does feel like, you know, squeezing an orange or something. Like you're trying to wring your brain out for like a solution. And sometimes like you just need to back off and then go do something completely different and draw inspiration from something that you would never think of doing, you know. Like I think the worst thing that I could have done would be to watch a bunch of movies and work out what was wrong with my movie. I think that it wouldn't have been enough distance. But,
yeah,
you know, to go to another country, you know, where I didn't really understand the language and just go to like the Van Gogh Museum or, you know, just check out a bunch of galleries and stuff and just, I mean, I'm not a sophisticated individual. Like my understanding of like art and art history is limited.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because you listen to the Weekly Planet, so you're not overly sophisticated. No, those two boys,
no, not
are
overly sophisticated.
No, I guess one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was TOEFOP, obviously, because that's, yep, one of our podcasts on our network.
Good plug.
Yeah, just a big plug. They're all, it's awesome, hilarious. What is your favorite thing about making the podcast with Will?
I guess it actually sort of relates to the writing thing. It's the freewheeling nature of it, you know. Like Will and I are quite honest about the fact that if we didn't have the podcast, we probably wouldn't talk as much as we do. You know, it was kind of the reason we started the podcast, was a reason to catch up, you know, like we actually had a reason to get together and chat. And, you know, like it's such a hard podcast to describe to people. We're terrible at selling it because it feels very indulgent. It's literally two friends getting together and just shooting the breeze, you know, and just whatever amuses them. And okay, I'd say this. There's the freewheeling nature of it. I do love when we're on song and we just follow an idea to its ridiculous end. Like that, to me, I just get so much joy out of that. Like I really enjoy those conversations where they just get,
yeah,
weirder and more convoluted, and, you know, we just take a hypothetical and expand on it. That to me is just feels like the greatest, you know, creative exercise ever. It's like, you know, creative writing, but you don't actually have to write anything. You just sort of... But I'd say that the real joy and what we're hoping to do with more with the show is just the amount of content it's generated, the amount of ideas, the amount of people who have been inspired by it, who've sent us artwork. You know, we're doing this comics. Well, we've got two comic strips that have come out of it. You know, Quantum Cop is something that I've been writing with James Fosdyke, the guy who does all our artwork, and I've been loving it. And it was funny because just recently, Will's on holiday at the moment, and so our producer, Mike Howell, put together a best of compilation where he basically wanted to show the audience where a lot of our running jokes or, you know, ongoing discussions had come from. So he just grabbed clips from, you know, almost 10 years worth of the show and cut them together to show people. And I was listening to it and I was like, oh my God, like there is actually like a through line to all this nonsense. Like there is an overarching narrative to our show, which I guess, you know, I didn't really contemplate because I don't really listen back to the show.
Mm.
But when you hear it cut together, I imagine that if you're an audience member or someone who listens to our show, there is a narrative that you have built up about Will and I's friendship over the course of 8 years. Like, you know, how Will feels about certain things and how I feel about certain things. You know what I can say to provoke Will and what Will can say to provoke me. Like there is quite a dense world within TOEFOP, like a detailed world. And so I just am like, oh, isn't that amazing? Like we have created all of that just by literally recording our conversations, you know, like, of course, there's some episodes that are a bit more planned than others, you know, when we bring in more of the listener element and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, like, you know, we have just sort of mined our friendship and our discussions to kind of come up with all these kind of things. And I just, I don't know, there's just something about it. I know the podcast that I love listening to, like, you know, the Weekly Planet, you know, I'm a huge fan of, and I really, like, I was listening to that for at least a couple of years before I met you guys. And
which is so great, by the way. We just think that's so cool.
But it's funny because, you know, I'd sort of had created this narrative in my head for James and Nick and their friendship and, you know, the certain kind of in jokes that they had and stuff. And I'd never stopped for 1 second to apply it to my own podcast. Because, you know, I kind of felt like the Weekly Planet's structured and it makes sense. And, you know, it just seems so much more professional than what we do.
Oh, God.
Then and then listening to what Mike Hall had done is like, oh, no, there is kind of like a loose structure to our shows. Like there are certain tropes and things that come back. And, you know, like podcasting is this sort of strange, I wouldn't even say new world anymore because it's not that new, but it is an art form within itself. And it's really the art form of conversation, you know. And there's podcasts like The Weekly Planet. There's other ones that I listen to that are so obscure. But I started listening to them 6 years ago and now I'm in too deep. I know all the personalities on these shows. I know who these guys are or these girls are. And I know their relationships and the ins and outs. And so I couldn't possibly recommend them to anyone because they're so niche. But there's something beautiful about that, you know. It's like you are in on it. People who listen to our show and they get the jokes or they understand, you know, why Clawson and Orson don't rhyme and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, they get it. They get it. I love that. Like, I just love that there's a community out there who are into our show, you know, because we really had no ambitions for it when we started it. You know, we just thought, look, this is what Will and I do when we get together. It's an accurate representation of what we're like when we get together. When, you know, our friends would throw parties or whatever, would get together and Will and I would always end up in the corner somewhere just talking nonsense, trying to make each other laugh, like, you know, bringing up obscure facts or trivia or whatever it is. So, you know, like whether or not it's a high form of art or entertainment, I don't know, but it is genuine. You know, like it's not manufactured. So I guess that's what I get out of it is like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who's a musician and we're talking about the creative process and he just talked to me about, I'm not musical at all, but he was saying that, you know, when he's in the studio and he, you know, creates a melody or a beat or whatever or something that just works for him, it just is this kind of transcendent experience for him because he doesn't even have to think about it. It just everything just comes
it's
naturally.
Effortless.
And he said, like, you know, what do you have in your life that's like that? And it's podcasting, you know, like not just my ones, but, you know, when I do this, when, you know, I did the Weekly Planet, I love it. I love sitting down and just chatting with people. I love exploring ideas. I love talking about things that interest me. I love listening to things that interest other people. Like, you know, maybe it's the product of being the youngest in a big family. You know, they were all big talkers. I grew up in a house where at family dinner, like everyone would have an opinion on something and conversations were very detailed and would cover a range of topics and points of view. And, you know, that's what I love.
Yeah, it's that art of conversation that seems so inconsequential in some ways, but I think is actually one of the fundamental things that moves us forward as humans. You know, I think that it...
Definitely.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Don't you reckon, especially now in the climate we're living in,
the
more that we can talk and listen to other people and really deep dive into what they think about things in a long form piece, which is what podcasting is, because often we're just listening to sound bites, you know, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a tweet from a madman, you know, that runs a country. And so, yeah, I really believe in podcasting, and I think what you and Will have done is show the incredibleness that is friendship, you know,
yeah.
and let people into a window into that and give them a lot of joy and humor along the way. And it ends up being this kind of funny thing where you've got all these friends that you've never met, but they know you so well. I feel so lucky to be a part of all of that too. So thank you so much. And it's great to have you and Will as part of it all too. So
we're very happy to be part. We feel like we're falling in with the cool kids. We're very happy to be part of that. It's just like, how lucky are we that like this network decided to take our stupid show on?
Can I get that in writing, James and I? That's very exciting that Charlie Clausen thinks we're the cool kids. Hi guys. Today I'm chatting to one of our podcasters from the Planet Broadcasting Network, Dave Warnicke, who is, I think, the king of just making things. From a musician in high school in a band, to writing musical comedy, to being a children's party entertainer where he had a disturbing experience in a Santa costume, to diving headfirst into stand-up comedy by doing his first gig in his very own Melbourne International Comedy Festival show, to a trivia night host and now associate producer of Funnies on the Project, Dave Warnicke is a man who is fearless. He is also a man of many talents, and he came over to our place on a Sunday arvo, and we had a grand old chat about how he got started and where he's going next. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Do Go On, I highly recommend it. It's three wonderful comedians, Jess Perkins, Matt Stewart, and of course Dave Warnicke, chatting about trivia, mainly history, and it's just hilarious. Dave's advice for making the most of the opportunities you have and working hard is so worth listening to. So I highly recommend you jump on board, stick around, and get those earbuds in your ears. Okay, off we go. Why trivia and comedy? That seems to be the trajectory that your career's taken.
Okay, so I guess when I was in high school, my dream was to be a rock star.
No. I thought you would say, I love it.
Super lame.
Not lame.
But that was sort of my thing, and I played in bands all throughout high school.
Keyboard. Can you throw me some band names?
Oh, okay. The first ever one in year seven was called Weed Hornet. And everyone thought we were massive stoners, but really the reason was we practiced in a garage, and in the garage there was a whippersnipper. The brand was called Weed Hornet, and that's why we called it that.
Okay, that's so awesome. I love that for so many reasons.
So that was sort of my first like uni job, was I would dress up as a clown.
What?
Or a wizard.
Yeah.
A cowboy, a pirate, a superhero, the Easter Bunny, and the most ridiculous one, if you've seen me, especially back when I was 19, was I dressed as Santa Claus at Christmas time. So people are paying big money for me to turn up, and I am like a very thin man, especially was back then, and very young looking. And I'd have to wear a fat suit, and I'd put on an unconvincing, deep Santa voice. And that was kind of okay, but it was a bit like comedy. When it went well, it was the best, but when it went terribly, it was so bad. Like I got practically beaten up by some kids one day. Oh, they are crazy.
They are crazy. They're like all the inner things that adults would love to do but can't because they're grown-ups. They just don't have that.
Oh, and sometimes the grown-ups don't give you any help at all. Like I remember once I was out in Caroline Springs, lovely suburb of Melbourne, and I was out there dressed as Santa, and I walked in there, and the first thing someone said to me, this is a drunk adult, yelled out, "You're not fucking Santa." I was like, there are kids around. And I'm like, oh, all right, this is hard. I started performing and I was singing, because you had to sing songs. I had to sing like Jingle Bells and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All inside this fat suit that was so hot. And some kids come up and I've got a CD player, and these two twins start karate chopping my CD player. And I'm looking at the dad like, give me some help, give me some help. And he's just going, ha ha, taking photos of it. It was so bizarre. And then on the way out, they followed me to the car park, and I was like, this is terrifying. Because some of the kids are now 14 or something.
Oh, my God.
I went back to my car eventually, and I sort of just chilled out, and I took the Santa suit off, and I was probably needed 30 minutes to sort of relax. And then when I drove off, half an hour later, I could see the kids on the playground. They were waving at me like viciously, like, bye, Santa. I was like, they've been waiting.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it's that was a tough gig.
What strikes me about all of that is that you are a hard worker. Would you agree with that?
I would say I'm a hard worker, but I also would say that one thing often just leads to another.
Yeah.
So one thing I didn't say earlier was, so I did the music and then it was a bit of stand-up. And then I started making a web series. It was called The Dave Warnke Experience. And I would set myself a challenge and my friends and I would just film it on camcorders. And this is like in the early days of YouTube. And we'd edit it on iMovie and sort of taught ourselves to edit and that kind of stuff. And so one of the challenges was to do a show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, which in Melbourne every year we have this big comedy festival, and it's like Australia's largest ticketed event.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So there's hundreds of shows, and they sell hundreds of thousands of tickets, and there's like massive comedians that do stuff in theatres with like 1,200 seats, and then there's also at the back of a pub. It's a bit like the kindergarten.
Yeah, exactly.
With like a 20 seats. And I'd only done comedy a few times, and I set myself this challenge. So I signed up to do the comedy festival, which is not something that I would tell anyone to do, but I am glad that I did it because sort of that was one of those things that one thing led to another. But so what I did was I signed up to do 7 shows at the Melbourne Comedy Festival at a pub in Fitzroy, a little bit out of the city, which I'm glad because that meant no reviewers came, no industry came. It was basically just me performing for my friends because I was only 19 or something this time. So a bunch of people from high school came, and it was really good because it was a roller coaster because I remember the first night it was sold out and I was like, this is amazing. I am a comedy god. And the next night, 2 people came. And it was like a real roller coaster.
They often say that, don't they? That there's sort of, you can have that initial like luck, and then when you're onto a good thing, and then the second thing you do is just the worst.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I experienced it that week. And yeah, it went well enough for me to want to keep doing comedy.
Doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm preparing for my currently 9th Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
So that was 8 years ago now.
Man.
Which is crazy that I'm still doing it.
It's
yeah.
so crazy. That's so incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, it's just I just like making things. And I always have ideas all the time, just constantly coming. I get very excited about a lot of ideas that just never happen.
I lose
enthusiasm. Like, and it always happens at the worst time. Like, I'll be like, all right, I've got to get up early tomorrow. I'm going to go to bed. And I'll be lying in bed and like an idea will hit me and I'll get so excited about it that I can't sleep for like 4 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I'll wake up in the morning and I'll think about the idea and it just isn't that good.
Yeah.
Or over time, I'm just like, oh, that's too hard. I'll write that idea down and I'll come back to it later. And I think my kind of rule is I've got to write down the idea and I've got to be able to come back to it in months' time and still think it's a good idea. Like, sometimes I have gotten, like, written down an idea, come back to it, forgotten that I'd even written the idea and been, like, made myself laugh with the concept.
Wow.
I think that happened with the idea of dating the audience. I thought that was funny. Wrote that down as, like, an off note. And then I came back to it not remembering it and I thought, oh, that's genuinely funny. That's a funny idea.
Well
yeah.
done, Dave.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I always go past, thank you, past Claire. That was good.
Yes,
you
did
good.
You
know what I mean? You did good, or like that was real bad because now I'm like have booked my day out or something or I'm really stressed. Past Claire's really let me down.
Yep, you really should have done more.
Yeah, exactly. But do you have a notebook? How do you keep your ideas?
I just write them down on my phone.
Oh, in the notes section?
Yeah, just a note type thing. I've got hundreds.
This is like a rabbit hole.
I remember 1,000 notes. It's just...
Wow.
And some of them mean nothing. I don't even know what they mean. You're just like, slap bald man. What does that mean?
Why is that funny?
Why is that funny? But I do remember what that was. I once had a... do you know the concept of lucid dreaming? Which is where you're dreaming, but you train yourself to realize you're dreaming.
Oh.
So the idea... Well, you don't have to... I didn't train myself, but I've experienced lucid dreaming, I think, twice in my life.
Yeah.
And it's basically people want to be able to train themselves so they can be in any situation and then be like, all right, great. Now I'm going to go party with Lenny Kravitz or whatever. Like you do anything you want to do. You can do anything you like.
Yeah.
Or like amazing. It's a nightmare and you can be like, this is just a nightmare. I'm going to go to a theme park now. Yeah, you can do anything you like. Yeah, but I remember the two times that I've realized it was a dream. Have you ever realized you were in a dream?
No. And now I'm really jealous.
Yeah, you should be.
Sounds awesome.
I thought about looking into training yourself to do it. Apparently one of the big things is when you wake up, you have to write down your dreams.
Yes. I was listening to a podcast recently. Who was talking about this? It was a Oprah podcast. He was very like a monk. It wasn't a comedy dream, but he was talking about that if you have to capture them, because dreams are really, really important, and you can learn a lot about yourself and your deep subconscious.
But when I wake up, I just want to go back to sleep. I can't be bothered writing down my dreams.
No, that's true. But you lose them so fast too.
Totally. But I remember this one. I was in a cafe and I realized, oh my God, I'm dreaming. I can do anything I like. And there was a bald man sitting down and I slapped him on the head and the whole cafe cheered. And I was like, this is amazing. And then I woke up. And the other time was probably about the time I was starting out in comedy. I had this laptop and it was so annoying. Like, it was just a really shitty old laptop. And it would always play up. It always like lose work that it had saved. And I realized I was dreaming. I could do anything I liked. So I grabbed that laptop and threw it out a window. And it was so satisfying. Yeah, they're my two lucid dreams.
Oh, man, that is incredible. I want a lucid dream now.
Great people do things before they're ready. They do things before they know they can do it. And by doing it, they're proven right. Amy Poehler. Jess Perkins, or Bop as she's sometimes called, is an Australian comedian, a radio host on Triple J, and one third of the very hilarious comedy trivia pod Do Go On. This girl has the most infectious laugh and is a downright smart and talented human. She's also a very wise one. I loved that she jumped into stand-up by entering into the Raw Comedy Festival, and I think she proves Amy Poehler right. If you don't jump in before you're ready, you may never jump in at all. What she has to say on failure, on self-doubt, and also about being a woman in the comedy industry is fascinating. Jess and I could have chin-wagged all day and did before and after I turned off the mics. I love her perspective on the world, her work ethic, and her love of joyful, silly storytelling comedy, because that's the kind that I love too. Okay, here we go. The latest episode of Just Make the Thing with the delightful Bop.
So, Jess Perkins. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for coming on Just Make the Thing.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, goodness. Okay, no pressure.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
I never appear on anyone else's podcasts, so no.
I was gonna
this
say.
Is a huge honour for you.
This is amazing. I know. I've been like preparing the house like the queen is coming. We haven't just like thrown our little cushions on the floor for our soundproofing and our dog hasn't attacked you.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's totally fine.
It's amazing, the service.
Yeah, I know. And if you can hear something in the background, that is the podcast dog trying to get in to bully Jess. But hopefully James will take her soon and it'll all be fine. So tell me about Do Go On. How did that eventuate?
My favourite thing. The boys have told me that they recorded a couple of episodes. I think it was originally Dave's idea is what I heard.
That's what Dave was saying on the show we interviewed him.
Dave's idea, and he did it with Matt because Matt also had sort of a bit of a trivia background. And they just sort of found that it was a bit hard with two voices because you sort of got one person doing the report and one other person going, yeah, it's interesting. It's really hard to riff. And I remember being at a gig in Footscray and Matt was on and we were just sort of chatting afterwards. And he was just very casually leaning against a table and he just said, oh, like Dave and I have been doing this podcast and wondered if you'd wanted to come in and join us for it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess. I didn't really know much about podcasts. I just liked both of those guys because I'd met them through the community radio I'd been doing and they both came on my web series. And
which is great, by the way.
Yeah. I guess that was me just wanting to make something. It was just a passion project. I was like, I just want to make something. Like, we really enjoy it. We never would have thought it would turn into what it has turned into. Mm. Like, if you told me 2.5 years ago that in 2.5 years you're going to have a joint bank account with Matt Stewart and Dave Warnocky, I'd be like, why? Why am I going to have that?
Yeah.
So we're like, it's like a business now. And, but I think if you get into a podcast thinking, well, this is going to be my job and it's going to be how I make heaps of money, it's not going to happen because you're coming in at the wrong angle.
Yeah.
Because we just came in at like, this is fun. And it still is. It's still always fun. I can be in a really bad mood or I can be really down and I'll head for the studio knowing that just talking to them is going to cheer me up.
Aww.
And it always does. Yeah. They annoy me. And I mother them. Yeah. And that annoys Matt. But yeah, they're like two of my best mates now and it's my favourite thing that I do.
It comes across in the show, definitely. Because I think that's the feedback I hear from people a lot, that they just laugh along with you.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the reports, but the friendship that
you
have and the way that you interact with each other and make fun of each other. And
yeah, but it's we make fun of each other, but it's with a lot of love.
Yeah. Mm.
It always comes from... Well, it doesn't come from a good place when you're making fun of someone, but it's there's no malice, there's no bad intentions. It is always friendly, and that means that the way people interact with us is much the same too. Like they'll muck around with us and they'll hang shit on us, but it's always in a pretty friendly way.
Yeah.
And I think the way that you interact on a podcast determines how people will interact with you as well.
100%.
Yeah. So we're very lucky that we are friendly with one another because people tend to be nice to us as well, which is good. Like, please don't abuse me on Twitter.
No, I couldn't handle that.
I don't like it.
No. I think that's like ultimately the whole Planet Broadcasting thing is like that.
Mm.
And it is. It's because of the way people speak to each other on their shows and then in the community, we're trying to build that kind of positive stuff, which I think is really rare on the internet.
Yeah. But also, like, most people will really like my laugh. I've got quite a loud laugh.
It's the best. I love your laugh.
A lot of people do, and that's really, really nice. But you'll get other people like, shut up. I'm like, well.
Don't listen, guys.
Yeah, don't listen. If you hate it that much, it's part of what I contribute to the show.
Yeah.
It's infectious.
It's one of my favorite parts.
It's so silly. But, so it is a bit strange. I'm not entirely sure what it is that motivates people to send hate. But it does tend to be, I don't know, maybe the boys get it and I don't see it as much, but they definitely don't like me sometimes. But I don't care.
Yay!
Yeah. I think you get to a point where you're just like, no, I'm secure in what I'm doing and I'm going to focus on the good feedback.
Yeah.
And constructive criticism, I'm always very open to. Mm. But just saying like, you're shit and you're not funny and your laugh's annoying. I'm like, well, that's not very constructive, is it?
No, that's
can't change any of those things. So,
so move on.
Move on. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
There is a kind of thing because James gets that a lot on Mr. Sunday Movies on his YouTube, particularly. They get like they have a whole segment on their show called Hate Mail, which is just that James reading out death threats and like ridiculous things people say. And he deals with it by. Yeah, just laughing about it.
You
in
have
the
to.
End.
Yep.
And in a way, you sort of think the bigger that you get, if you're not getting hate mail yet, that means you're not that big. In a way.
That's a great way of looking at it.
Like if you're getting hate mail, you're like, yeah, I think I've made it now.
Yeah, I've done it.
That kind of sometimes annoys me in radio, that trope of the two funny blokes and then the woman who's like, guys, be serious.
Yeah.
You know, oh, stop it, Greg.
Yeah.
Get back on track. You know that kind of trope?
Yeah, I think so. And I fall into that role sometimes on the podcast. Like I was watching back, we've been filming our live shows at the Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
And I was watching back one that we did a couple of weeks ago and I was in a real mood that day. Like I had been very upset and down and stressed all morning. And so anyway, so we get to the show and I'm fine, but I'm grizzly.
Yeah.
I was a little bit snappy and I was mothering the boys a bit and was doing a bit of that like, Matthew, you're going to be – I do it to Matt particularly, but it is always as a joke.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, he left the stage at one point and I said, okay, you're going to stay in time out until you're ready to behave. And I'm joking, but I was watching it back like, I don't want to fall into that.
No.
I don't want that to be my role because it isn't. And more often than not, I'm derailing the podcast.
Yeah, you are. You're the one that's getting so silly and like creating some real like land in your head. Jess has just gone into some world where the carrots are talking to her or something.
But it's so fun in that world. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is so fun.
And Dave's kind of the one that has to pull us back into track.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what's nice about the podcast is that we don't have defined roles. We kind of like sometimes I'm the idiot, sometimes Matt's the idiot. Occasionally Dave's the idiot, but like Dave will go on like a tangent where he's playing this character now and Matt will just throw in little lines here and there. So you kind of you're not stuck in one role, which I think is nice. Like, yeah, there isn't absolutely one straight man, there isn't one idiot. We kind of, you just do what you feel at the time. And maybe that's kind of why it works too,
yeah,
is because, you're not stuck having to play your role. You're just getting to be yourself.
Yeah. My favorite parts of the show when you're doing the improvisational kind of like, and when they do the Dougal animations, that one where someone's flying or something, you go, Dave starts flying and there's like a can of beer or something in someone's like bits. Yep. I don't know. Just my favorite bits.
They're ridiculous. Yeah. Or whenever Dave goes, I think my favorite's when it was Shackleton's expedition and there was the slugs.
Yeah.
Just so left field from Dave that I wasn't expecting it, and it just broke me. He's so funny.
He's so funny.
I'll now dress like a slug and chew our way out of it. Like, it's ridiculous, but it's great.
It's so great. Yeah. And that's, I think, why it works. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
I felt like that was a therapy session in itself.
I really
felt
like loved
I talked
it.
About so many different things.
It was great.
Yeah.
Living out. No, I feel like it's a therapy session. I'm on the couch. The whole thing. So where can we find you at the moment? What are the things? Where online?
I'm such a fan of Instagram. I'm always doing Instagram stories. So you can find me on Instagram. I think I'm just Jess Perkins on Instagram. And Jess_Perkins at Twitter. But mostly do go on. That's my main thing at the moment. And intermittently I'm on Triple J as well. I'm all at different weird times. Usually 1 a.m. sometimes in the afternoon on weekends. Who knows? Wherever they can fill me in, that's where I go.
My favorite thing that you do on Instagram, so I love an Instagram too. I'm really getting into it. It's just you at like 3 a.m. being like, I've eaten all my snacks early. Now I'm panicking.
Oh, that was very upsetting when I ate all my snacks. Yeah, I always love doing the late night Instagram stories because you start off feeling pretty good and then you crash and then you're fine again. And it's really fun. And also I'm alone in a studio for 5 hours. So I've got to do something to keep myself entertained.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, well, check Jess out on Instagram or at 3 a.m. on Triple J. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. Happiness is the joy that we feel when we're on the road striving after our potential. Sean Anker. This week, I'm interviewing the final member of our wonderful podcast, Do Go On. Matt Stewart's latest stand-up comedy show, Dry Ginger Mail, sums him up pretty perfectly. Matt is a stand-up comic with a great red beard, a podcaster, a footy fanatic, and is part of the team behind Stupid Old Studios, which is a crazy warehouse in the depths of the hipster-centric suburb Brunswick in Melbourne. I ventured out from the bush to go visit him at the studio where they record Do Go On, and it was awesome. I always love a visit to Stupid Old Studios because you just never know what you're going to get. It's a rabbit warren of comedians and writers and creatives recording podcasts, writing in offices, working in think tanks, filming sketches and editing shows. They produce a lot of amazing comedy, including Auntie Donna's show, and we have lots of our podcasters who work out of that studio. But anyway, back to Matt himself. He's a guy that is the ultimate team player. He usually talks in jokes and dry sarcasm, which I think is hilarious. But today he was surprisingly heartfelt, and I found what he had to say not only about making comedy a career, but life in general, so fascinating. Matt always comes across as unflappable and someone who you would want around in a crisis to crack a joke, give you a wry smile, and then just get on with the task at hand. He is one lovely dude, this dude. I don't know if I've said dude before, but there you go. Okay, here is the hilarious Dry Ginger Mail himself, Matt Stewart.
Just press record.
Just press record. We can always edit out the beginning bit.
Yes, we like can. You didn't do for Luke and Celia.
But it was funny because you did a funny laugh.
What is this gotcha journalism?
That's what it's really about, Matt Stewart.
Well, it's all about. I won't fall for that.
I don't know if you will or not. You got a cold. You're vulnerable.
I'm vulnerable. That's true.
You are very vulnerable. Well, hello. We're not at the Sunday residence today.
You have a residence for every day. In your Sundays.
Yeah, we're at Stupid Old Studios today.
What an honour to be here.
It is an honour. It's an honour. I feel very honoured. And you do go on in here.
Yes. Arnie Donna in here too. A few from your network.
Yeah, the two in the think tank.
Two in the think tank. Occasionally Josh Earl does his in here as well.
This is true. This is like podcast royalty.
Yeah. This is just sitting on the throne.
Yeah. Not on the toilet. On no. Like
the pod throne.
The pod throne. Yeah, there is a big throne in here. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm letting you sit on it today. Normally that's my spot.
Oh, thanks. I feel special. That's nice. Well, let's like start and I'll ask you some questions. And my first question for you, Matt Stewart, is why did you start selling air conditioning?
Why did I start selling air conditioning?
Yeah. And how long ago were you doing that?
So I needed a job. And my cousin was working for this air conditioning company. So I went and talked to them. Didn't know anything about air conditioning at all. It's funny, like they were asking real basic questions like, do you know what the difference between evaporative cooling and refrigerated cooling is? And I'm like, I think I've heard those words before. Sort of. I hated it. I found it really scary at first. They'd make the appointments. People would call up and say, I want an air conditioner. And then you'd go to their house and be the expert. So, which got easier as I learned more about it. But yeah. At the start, saying I was an expert when I'd only just recently found out what air conditioning meant. I don't think I was very convincing early, but I remember sitting in my car just going, oh, shit. Heart pounding. Going in there going, oh, no. They're going to see right through me. I don't know any answers. Please don't ask me any questions.
Did you literally go, yep, that's an air conditioner?
Yep. Yeah, I reckon we could sort that out for you. No doubt about that. But I also, you know, we hardly have any air conditioning here. Ideally, you don't have air conditioning because it uses so much power and we should just be able to deal with it. But so, I mean, all these, having that as a philosophy didn't help me because I worked on commission.
Oh. Just got to people.
But I'm like, honestly, do you really need?
It's bad for the environment.
I'm like, if you definitely need it, then let's figure this out. But do you really need it?
Why don't you just use a handheld fan?
just lay it down. Yeah. Singlet, shorts, you'll be fine.
Couple of cool bevies.
Crack a window.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm glad you're in comedy now and not in air conditioning sales.
But there's different things. Sometimes like when I'm going to an open mic or some sort of a gig, you're going off to a gig for not a lot of money somewhere. I'd earn more money if I just stayed doing a normal job and I would be on the couch now watching a movie or whatever. That'd be nice. I think that sometimes, and then I remember that I did used to do that and I felt unfulfilled. And that's why I'm not doing that anymore. So
Do you feel fulfilled now?
Not entirely. I feel like I still want to be better at everything.
Mm. Yeah. But isn't that life, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That you have to keep pushing. I think even Will Anderson was saying that there's just always something else, especially when you're working in creative stuff.
Yeah, I reckon that's why super rich and young celebrity type people who reach the top real young hit trouble because it's like, well, where do you go from here?
Yeah.
I think it's important to have what's keeps you going, have something to strive for.
Mm.
If you feel content, I mean, that must be nice though.
Yeah.
If you're genuinely content, you're like, I'm just happy with this. That's got to be good. Yeah. But I think you got to try and appreciate what you have while still. Alistair told me the secret to happiness a while ago, which I think he heard from someone else, was doing something that makes you happy while looking forward to something that makes you happy.
Yes. Oh, he's a wise guy.
Yeah, I think that's pretty true.
So true. I heard too that it was about living towards your potential. So like when you're in the mode where you're working towards where you want to go and being your best self or whatever it is, that sounds a bit Oprah-y, but do you know what I mean? That kind of idea. So it's not necessarily the getting there, but the idea that you're in a position where you're using all your talents and pushing yourself and moving forward and extending yourself.
Yep.
And that kind of is a good feeling.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Making progress.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of inch by inch.
Yeah, you look back at the year before and go, I didn't feel like it, but I've done a lot of work towards, you know, things I want to do.
Yeah.
Because it never really feels like it until you look back, I don't think.
Yeah, it's so true. So just how I feel like with Planet Broadcasting, I sort of think, oh, it's not going where it should be or it's not moving fast enough. But then you look back and you think, oh, actually, it's, you know, it's coming along. It's
such a good place. What a positive thing you've done.
Oh, thanks, mate.
We feel very lucky to be involved with Do Go On.
Well, we feel lucky to have you guys as a part of it, actually.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, and James's brother will be real embarrassed to say this, but he's like a massive fan of Do Go On.
Oh, that's nice.
And all of you guys, because it's such a fun show.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, it's something I look forward to. I think that's one big difference between the podcast and like stand-up is there's no anxiety leading up to it. I always feel excited by it. Well, it's a funny difference between stand-up where there are times, especially trying out new material, where it's like, I feel sick in my stomach. It's always positive feelings with Do Go On. The live shows are the same. It's funny, like, normally I'd have some, like, my heart would be really pounding before going out on stage, but the live shows with Do Go On, I just feel so chilled out. Just, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's like a big hug. You just feel like everyone is there wanting to give you a hug and a high five.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of the people who listen to our show just seem to be the nicest people as a general rule. Yeah, that's probably the same across the network basically, isn't it?
Yeah, I reckon. I think so. Definitely.
We feel very lucky. We talk about that a bit, how lucky we are to have such rad listeners.
Yeah, they're pretty good ones, those ones.
This is long enough, right?
I think so. Oh, God.
You happy?
I'm sorry, Claire? Collings. Poor Collings. He's going to have to try and edit this together into something comprehensive and cohesive.
If anyone can do it.
That guy can.
That's right.
Surely. Yeah. I think that's it.
Mm.
Yeah. Go make the thing.
Don't you have to, like, plug social media or something?
No, I do that after.
You don't do that?
I do it after.
Okay. No, I mean, like, do you want me to do it?
No, I have a whole system.
I know you don't.
Oh, bloody hell. He's trying to tell me how to podcast. It's like he's a very accomplished podcaster or something.
I certainly am.
You're the friggin' worst.
Thanks.
No, you're not. You're great.
Oh.
You're welcome.
You turned it around.
Okay, signing off there, Sunny Jim.
Goodbye.
Good.
This has been...
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
What are we doing? We're starting again?
No, we're saying goodbye.
Oh, goodbye. They said hi.
Oh, okay. Done!
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.